The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Oh, you insulting tongue, it mocked my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I am your host, Tim D-O-double-G.
Yay!
And I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects, at Agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
Roddy Cat will be joining us at some point tonight.
Yay, Roddy!
And we send a shout-out to @PCN_Dirt, who's feeling under the weather with the, I believe it was 100-degree...
Temperature. Yeah, feel better, Dirt. Be well.
Be well. So make sure to go to his website, popculturenetwork.com. Give him some website clicks, if you will. And also go to theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Subscribe to our newsletter. Just go to theclicknation.com's homepage. There's a nice sign-up text field and button to click on. Just throw your email address in there. Join our exclusive email newsletter. Follow us on our various social media web accounts. You can find those again on theclicknation.com. Remember, we are part of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. Go to cspn.us and check us out, along with all the nice podcast on the CSPN. Remember, we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, give or take. And when you're talking comic books on social media, make sure to use the hashtags CBCron and Comic Book Chronicles. We'll see those, especially if they're tweets, we'll see them and we'll retweet them and join you in the conversation. And make sure to buy merchandise from the CSPN merchandise store, and that's at redbubble.com/people/CSPN/shop. Oh, and also make sure to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher Radio. We will be on Google Play at some point, but the CSPN does have their own. The main feed for the CSPN is on Google Play. There's SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes Radio.
Oh, we're all over the place.
Yeah. And when you're listening, make sure to reshare the episodes and give us 5-star reviews or thumbs up or whatever form of encouragement the platform has. All right. So some big comics came out this week.
Yes.
Do we want to start with Avengers Standoff?
Yeah, we might as well, because this is the end of, you know, the Avengers-centric crossover in the Marvel U. That's pretty much the precursor to some of the issues that are going to happen in Civil War, the summer event.
Yeah. I was listening to Nick Spencer on the Word Balloon podcast with John Suntress.
Shout out to John Suntress.
Yep. He had mentioned, he made sure to go out of his way to say that Standoff doesn't tie in that closely to Civil War. Mm-hmm. You know, they are their own separate entities, but some things that probably happened in Standoff should see maybe referenced in Civil War 2, perhaps.
Right.
So I like to, I didn't really have any preconceived notions going into Standoff. Like with most Marvel events, there's never an end point when these things end, which is starting to become a habit and a gripe of mine, not seeing these things have some kind of definite, you know, definitive ending.
Right. What's cool is that the setup is often the best part.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot like Infinity. It's a lot like, what else am I thinking of?
Let's see, Infinity, or I guess Siege kind of had an ending, but like, yeah. Secret War, Secret Invasion.
Yes.
Everything just leads into the next upcoming event.
Right. And basically the last issue of the event sets up either new issues, new number one issues, or new status quos for certain characters. That's really all that it does.
And when I say there was no ending, like nothing, like the bad guys got away. Zemo got away.
Mm-hmm.
Kobik. Oh yeah. Kobik's with Bucky.
Well, hold on.
Yes. And I don't see how this leads into Thunderbolts. There was no setup for Thunderbolts.
There's a mild setup. It was very, very out there. The bottom line here is, you know, it's the heroes, it's the Avengers trying to round up the villains, right? Cap, Steve Rogers has been reinvigorated, so he's taken the lead. You know, like you said, Zemo gets away. Who else gets away? Spoiler alert, it is a very Cap-centric villain that appears at the end of this. It's a mild spoiler. We also have the reappearance of, we do have a reappearance of a hero, and that hero's legacy being brought forward post, let me see, without spoiling too much, it's a mild spoiler, post Infinity? I want to say we last saw this character Infinity. It was definitely a big crossover.
Okay.
Right?
I don't recall, but that doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Oh, you know what? It may have been, honestly, it may have been even earlier than that. It may have been a Guardians of the Galaxy thing where we last saw this character. And that's obviously a big hint as to who this character might be.
You've reminded me of something before. I'm trying to think, was this? Yes. Since Secret Wars ended and Guardians started back up, we had the Nowhere Corps was introduced, but nothing really has happened with them yet.
Right, I haven't, but I also haven't been reading the Guardians of Infinity book, so I kind of lost track of, you know, of those characters.
Right. Let's see what else. Like you said, it was very Avengers-centric, just overall. A lot of fighting, a bunch of the different Avengers teams fighting sort of nameless villains, C and D-list villains.
Yeah, definitely C and D-list villains. We also have the setup of Maria Hill's status quo going forward.
That was more the bigger story than anything else, I felt like.
Right, and I feel like that's where it may tie into some of the future Marvel Universe stories. Like, you know, it's probably not going to be a direct tie into Civil War, but that's probably going to be one of the factors leading into it. You know, the fact that the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. is, you know, doing these untoward things.
Right.
So I'm trying to find out the last time. Now I'm Googling, like, dang, I can't remember when we last saw this character. So annoying.
Like with Thunderbolts, I'm trying to figure out, is, are the Thunderbolts just going to be like a renegade team? Are they working with the government?
Mm-hmm.
I guess it comes out next week, so we'll see very quickly. But so far, there isn't much information given to, you know, what their mission statement is going to be.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, you know, as you know, what you were alluding to earlier, the Thunderbolts setup is is only touched on. You know, we don't really have much of a basis to go on just from the pages of this book. Did you mention that the Whisperer, Rick Jones, is also going to have a status quo, an updated status quo going forward?
We don't know what that is, though, do we?
Yeah, we sort of do. He's going to be tied into, and I'll ring the bell. He's probably going to be tied into the new Steve Rogers Captain America book.
Oh, well, yeah. Naturally, they had a Netspeak thing, live blog chat with Spencer and Tom Brevoort today on Marvel.com. And yeah, Spencer said that Rick Jones and Sharon Carter would be in the Steve Rogers Cap book.
Okay, cool.
So he will be sticking around.
That works.
Supposedly the new version of the character we saw will be in both Captain America's books and then also playing a larger role in the Marvel Universe moving forward. Yada, yada.
Right. Well, you know what? Honestly, it's one of those things where, you know, and I hate to say this, we sort of know that the Odin son is going to resume being Thor at some point, right?
Right.
But it's kind of cool to see, you know, legacy characters who may or may not change gender. You know, these characters who aren't necessarily, you know, fixtures in the Marvel Universe, you know, passing on the torch. And, you know, it's a different way of creating diversity and creating more diversity of characters.
Anything else to add to?
No, I mean, you know, it's chock full of stuff, right? But it was just kind of a ho-hum ending to the story.
Cool. Let's see. We can stick with Marvel. Trying to see what we both read. Actually, there's what we both read. Tell me how Amazing Spider-Man 11 was.
So Amazing Spider-Man number 11 is the last issue in this long, long slog from the first issue. We're up to number 11 now. We've been following grown-up Tony Stark Light Peter Parker in his ongoing battle against the Zodiac. And this issue is a culmination of all those stories. I guess it's going to break itself up into two trades. But, you know, we have kind of a cool, some cool reveals. Let's put it that way. In the story. So, you know, while we have the final battle against Scorpio, who wields the Zodiac Key, you know, Peter Parker has to take certain drastic steps to, you know, to win this particular battle. And we have, spoiler alert, we have some hints as to what is going to happen in the future. What we find out is the big goal of Zodiac, of Zodiac's plot, of Scorpio's plot, was to basically see a full year into the future and basically know what was going to happen for a full year and use that to their advantage. And we're given some hints as to what's going to be developing over the next year as a result of that. Spider-Man does prevail in the end. We also have very, very strong hints as to what's about to happen, which is, spoiler alert, the return of one eight-legged villain. We'll put it that way.
I have a guess at the villain, but...
Well, eight, when I say eight-legged, it's four mechanical and four limbs.
Oh, so I didn't hear the eight-legged portion of it.
That was the easy part. That was the big tip. So, and also, I think it's been teased in previous issues, we do have the appearance in the Marvel Universe proper of the villain from the Renew Your Vows Secret Wars limited series, if you recall that.
Right, are you there?
It's not I was about to say, it's not really a spoiler. It's Regent.
I am here. Can you hear me?
Oh, you're underwater.
I figured. When did you say that? Right. Hang on.
Roddy's underwater.
So he will hopefully join us in a little bit again.
Sure. What else did you read? Let's talk about Daredevil.
Okay.
Daredevil number 6, because you
Roddy,
have...
Roddy.
How do I sound now?
Perfect. Very well. Very well.
Great. Well, thank you.
Welcome back, Roddy!
Thank you. Thank you.
We so far we've only done Avengers Standoff and Amazing Spider-Man 11.
Okay, well, haven't read Standoff yet, and wasn't reading Spidey, and I'm not caught up on Spidey, so
no okay. problem. Just wanted to give you a chance in case you want to chime in.
No, I've heard some things about Standoff, or at least one or two things about Standoff, so I'm kind of curious about reading it. That's all right.
All right.
Daredevil 6.
Right, so I see that you have some notes on Daredevil 6, and I am inclined to agree. Although it was kind of jarring. The change in art was a little jarring for me because I had gotten used to Garney's new style on Daredevil, to Ron Garney's new style. But I did like the artist on this issue. That's Mark
Mateo.
Oh, Mateo. I apologize, Mateo Bufani.
Yeah, he actually did the last previous arc on Amazing Spider-Man.
Okay.
And some other things, but that's what he's done recently. He did the Cloak and Dagger, whoever that villain, Mr. Negative, I think his name
right.
was. Yeah, he did that arc.
Okay.
So I like his art, so that's the only reason I decided to give this issue a Daredevil try. Because I wasn't too crazy with the Ron Garney change in style for... The first arc of Daredevil. It wasn't bad, it just wasn't that appealing to me.
Understood.
And Daredevil's always been a character I've never really gotten into in the comics, so trying to...
Follow that style of art. Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah.
It did make for some difficult... You know, there's a couple of scenes that were hard to follow because of the art.
Yeah. You know? But this was easy to pick up. It was kind of a half fight between Daredevil and Elektra, and another little small portion dedicated to Matt Murdock in the courtroom, or his and also in his personal life,
right?
And teasing how, you know, we don't know how he's put the
genie back in the bottle.
Yeah, as far as his secret identity not being known to the public anymore.
Right, so this is going to lead down that road, you know, to us finding out how that happened. This is also the first reappearance of Elektra in All New, All Different, I believe.
Yes,
and obviously coincides with the character's appearance on the Netflix series. So meant to take advantage of the heightened exposure of the character,
and then a change with this character.
Yes, we are not going to spoil the cliffhanger ending. My basic feelings on this issue were it was kind of, you know, it was just okay. There were a couple of nice fight scenes. There's a little bit of a tease, as we were alluding to earlier, of the reveal as to how Matt Murdock has ceased to be a public, has ceased to be associated with Daredevil. So that's a cool tease, but ultimately what makes this book and what actually made me audibly, I always joke about this when we're on the show, when I'm reading my copies on the train and I flip to this, to a cliffhanger type page, and I basically say out loud, even with headphones on, holy blank. And that was enough. The cliffhanger in this issue was enough to have me say something audibly. For people to hear, because it was that shocking for me, at least. So without going into any more, if you're reading Daredevil, this is the start of a new arc. If you are not reading Daredevil, but you're looking for a more familiar Daredevil that maybe wasn't in that first creepy Ten Fingers arc, then jump on here. This is definitely a good jumping on point.
You've been reading it from the beginning, right?
Yes. How many times have I talked about creepy Ten Fingers?
Yeah. So. 10 times. All right. What do you want to chime in with, Roddy? Is there a book you want to toss out there?
Excuse me. Sure. Let's start from the middle. Miss Marvel number 6.
Yay! I love this book.
This issue was so awesome. I love this issue. Like,
there's so much packed into this.
Yeah, exactly. Even in like the little background of the art, art wise, there's just a lot of stuff packed in there, which in this book it usually is. So, we find our dear Kamala in a nice little pickle where she has a bunch of clones that's been made of her because she couldn't handle trying to be everywhere at once.
So she literally tried to be everywhere.
So she literally exactly tried to be everywhere at once, but they used Loki's lightning golems from, I guess, last previous volume, or at least Bruno did, and ended up creating almost a couple of literal monsters, now that I think about it.
A bunch of monsters.
Exactly, because they couldn't cloning themselves and cloning themselves, and there was one that ended up, for some reason, growing really, really gigantic, almost titanic, I guess, if you want to go make that reference, and just started tearing up the city, and it was kind of funny and cute at the same time, because you'll see there's this one panel where the big one's kind of stomping around it, and Kamala's trying to stop it. But then you see a bunch of little ones, like, looking towards it and just either kind of praising it or doing other stuff. And so it was pretty funny. So Bruno gets this idea to where he makes a T-Rex to try to stop it and brings it up to Kamala while she's trying to fight the thing, even though he's already made it. And that gets out and starts terrorizing, so which adds to the whole other calamity. And then you have on,
I was going to say that was a great sequence of dialogue and art.
Oh, yeah, indeed.
By the creative team of G. Willow Wilson and Nico Leon. That one page where Bruno is telling Kamala, I've got an idea, tells her the idea, and then you hear, or then you read Kamala speaking to him over the phone saying, what are you, 4? What kind of, or 5, are you 5 years old? You want to make this is the solution you've come up with to deal with all these clones?
Right, and then he's like, oh, so that's a bad idea. She's like, oh, you've already done it, haven't you? Yeah. And then you just cut the scene where it's just kind of out and about.
Yeah.
So
it was really, that was really well executed.
Yeah, you should pick up this issue if anything else, even if you don't, well, I guess it wouldn't help if you didn't know what was going on previously, but it's still a good read regardless.
I was going to say, this is a tougher issue for a first-time reader because it's the culmination of a number of issues now. This is issue number 6. This is basically the end of the first arc.
Right.
What we have is also a continuation of the previous volume, because we do have the appearance of, you were alluding to him earlier, the goop left by the golems. Left there by Loki, Kid Loki, in the previous volume of Ms. Marvel.
No, it wasn't Kid Loki. It was Bruno Loki.
Oh yeah.
But so and Bruno goes to try to summon Loki, which he ends up showing up for. Pretty much, you had a bunch of people showing up. Like Loki shows up, he goes into battle, which was a fun scene because you see him on top of one of the golems, just leading the charge. To me, minions or something like that, and that was pretty cool. And like this was around the time that Kamala comes in, but she had just tried to contact Captain Marvel,
Very Jimmy Olsen style,
right? Exactly. Who apparently gave her because I remember her getting that pendant, but I didn't know if that was something actually behind it. Mm-hmm. And it turns out it was because it was a beacon for her. Then Captain Marvel comes in, cleans up the mess, and then after this, we have a little, a little heart to heart with.
There's another hero that comes in to help.
We're getting to that. There was a heart to heart.
So many guest stars.
Yes, this is so much fun. There's so much happening.
Yeah, indeed. And then we have an appearance by in the midst of this heart to heart, Tony Stark in Iron Man costume, and he kind of comes in. Has a nice little face-off looking thing with Carol, which could be alluding to something else.
Oh, it is definitely alluding to something else because of exactly how Nico Leon draws the panels.
Mm-hmm.
He's drawing the panels. Yeah, three panels.
What I'm saying, the face-off was only two panels because after that, that's when Carol left.
Right.
But in those two panels, this is telling.
Yeah, it's pretty. That was pretty cool, and obviously, like you said, it's a foreshadowing of the next Marvel event. And finally, we kind of have like a nice little wrap on a personal story for Kamala as her her brother gets married, and it all turns out, and it also kind of wraps up this little drama that she's been having in terms of splitting up her time. Yeah. She finally figures out how to prioritize.
It was definitely a well executed end to this arc. It has all the heart that Ms. Marvel has had the whole time. It has bits of laughter. It has something actually going on, but
character development. We actually get a lot of character development in this arc, and those guest stars that we were mentioning earlier do play a role in that.
Right. So the weird part about it though was when Tony came in and after they had their little talk, he hugs her, which I thought was weird for him.
Yeah, that was awkward.
So, but I was like, oh, that was touching. But I was like, wait, this is Tony Stark. That's weird.
Definitely.
But otherwise, this was a great issue. It's a particular click of the week.
Same.
I enjoy this a lot.
Yeah, Roddy, you missed the discussion earlier just before we got on. I was talking to Tim off the air, and I was saying how this week is full of story arcs ending, and some of them just kind of ended ho-hum, but this particular one ended on a very high note.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. And I guess there's another one that we get into that has some interesting beats to it also.
Yeah, I started reading it before the show, but I'm only like halfway through, so I got to the part where Loki showed up.
Right. Weirdly enough, the things that I meant to read, which was Standoff and Doctor Strange, I didn't get to.
I won't spoil too much about whatchamacallit, Doctor Strange. It was good, though.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
You want me to just talk about it real quick, or?
If you want to.
I was going to save it for rapid fire if no one else read it, though.
So, oh, okay.
Which one? The Last Doctor Days?
Strange. No, just the regular. Actually, I did read Last Days, so I could talk about that, too.
I heard the reading order was Last Days and then the...
Yeah, because last issue kind of says, hey, read this and then...
I forgot that, and I read them out of order,
I started reading Last Days, but didn't finish it.
It didn't hurt to read it out of order, though.
Gotcha. Right, because I think supposedly Last Days is supposed to go into the next, or this issue, I guess, but some kind of way.
All right, so what else did we read?
Have y'all talked about Ultimates?
No.
We can.
Go ahead.
Okay. Sorry, I'm hitting.
It's a sort of a standalone issue focusing on Galactus, the Lifebringer.
Yeah, blinged out Galactus, as we called him the other time.
I feel like this is one of those issues, is like you could look at it and be like, nothing really happens in it, but I feel like so many seeds were planted.
I'm going to say that's not true, though, because it actually did. It's just a bunch of exposition. So.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember how the deal with Eternity and Galactus. Like Eternity's being in chains and Galactus arguing with order and chaos.
and punches one of them straight in the mouth, which was funny.
That was a cool one-page spread, though.
Yeah, I had to screen cap that one. That was pretty cool. There was also the altercation with Ordi and Chaos, you know, which is good. And again, more building up to or building around what is to come on that, and Galactus's roles to it, including using a couple of actually, I think we talked about this the last issue where they had found a creative way to talk about the time changes, you know, what's going on with the current time changes. In this issue, they're doing that with the whole Omniverse at large, or at least, you know, explaining it in a couple of different ways using using the Legend of Sisyphus, which, you know, or go ahead.
I got a question.
Yeah.
So if I'm understanding things the way it was explained in Ultimates, since Eternity is chained up, that's the reason there's no multiverse anymore, or Omniverse, as they call it?
No. I mean, clearly there is, because, I mean, we see like, you know, Spider-Gwen's world, and we see, you know, people running rampant here and there. But I think that part was kind of interesting, because they don't really, they touch on it, but they don't really touch on it, because you see them, they're in chains, and you see, you know, when Galactus is talking to, spoiler alert, Molecule Man shows up, which was also funny, because Galactus, after his tete-a-tete with Order and Chaos, pretty much gets summoned by Molecule Man, and even Galactus is scared of him.
Yeah, he's like, don't provoke him, and
he gets pretty much punked out by him at the same time after having a couple of decent fights. So I was like, which makes sense, because, I mean, just like you said, it's like, hey, he can just, you know, with a thought, he could just end me real quick. So I'm not entirely sure, going back to what you're saying, I'm not entirely certain if that's what that means by that, but I'm thinking it kind of means that the Omniverse can't grow any further than what it is, because he's chained up. I guess I'm not entirely certain. There's a piece that I'm actually missing on that one.
Okay.
There was one part of it, but I think I got a grasp on, but it wasn't that part. So, but that said, like I said, Molecule Man, Galactus have their little talk, and apparently Galactus kind of gets a thought in his mind based on what Molecule Man says, and he leaves. And like I said, it's clearly the parable that was used in the story has something to do with Galactus's task. In fact, the one that comes up may actually be Galactus, is the way I'm thinking about it, you know, because they were basically talking about, well, the story of the, it's a story that's been told in many cultures, whatever. The person of legend that rolls the rock uphill, but gets to a point, and then the rock goes back down, and then he has to keep pushing it back up the hill, but he never ever makes it. Which, that could be Galactus is in this point, and the rock could be the Omniverse, as I'm thinking about it, because there's
so many possibilities.
Yeah, because there's a couple of things that kind of come out of that seemed a little. I was like, that's not a coincidence that's brought up, and they even brought up the fact that, hey, even asking. Molecule Man asks, well, is this the seventh universe, or is this the eighth? Because apparently this has happened before. So, which is why I'm thinking that's what ties that parable into what's going on to that. So maybe Galactus is going to be the one tasked with trying to get the rock up the hill, so to speak. I don't know. But like I said, I'm loving this one also, because, you know, one, it's Al Ewing, and he is yet to disappoint in his writing, you know. And I think his name will come up at the end of the year, I'm thinking, and I'm hoping I don't forget that, because I think it should.
I've been keeping a list of people or books I want to win awards.
Yeah, and if this sticks, and if this landing gets stuck like I'm hoping it will, I think it will be up there with. I'm not gonna go to Ronald Hickman Momo Jumbo, because at least this one's kind of landed out a little bit,
right? You
know, a little bit better, but I'm enjoying it nonetheless. So
interesting setup. What I think is kind of cool is that the art does not seemingly detract from the story.
Yeah, I've seen people talk about that, and I think I kind of get why the art was changed on this, because there was a kind of a psychedelic trippiness to the to the art, and it was, I mean, I'm thinking it was a little bit rough, but I didn't think it was bad, is what I'm hearing some people think. But at the same time, people are thinking, well, because
they're comparing it to Rockford, yeah,
right, and I get that, because it just kind of draws people out of it once you come into this, and I've had that moment in the past with books. But I think this was deliberate, you know, and I think it plays pretty well the way it was supposed to, personally.
Okay.
You know,
I'll make sure to catch up on that. I didn't have a chance to read it this week.
Yeah, it's definitely a good read, and also another potential click of the week. So,
all right, why don't we jump over to some DC? Batman 51.
The end of an era, is it?
The end of an era for Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo on their final issue of Batman together. And it's sort of, again, a one-off story of Batman sort of patrolling Gotham and checking in on all the various characters during Snyder and Capullo's run together, even though they should have checked in on Harper Row since they created and introduced her, I believe, but she didn't make an appearance. But the power goes out in Gotham. Batman goes out patrolling and checks in on a bunch of villains. You can sort of think of it as a putting all the toys back where they belong before you leave the book type deal. Alfred gets his hand back. Batman's at his peak physical.
Yeah, I just thought that was lame.
Strength.
That was lame. Hand. How could they do that with the hand to Alfred? Just like that. They don't even show anything. They just say, hey, looky.
Is it cybernetic?
No, I don't think it's a Coulson hand.
Oh, okay. Oh, we got to get to that later, too. But anyway.
Yes.
And it is Bruce, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Because I'm not reading this. I don't know. Yeah.
We check in. I guess there was like a callback, I think, from the first issue of Batman, of him going to Arkham Asylum and keep being confronted by all the villains, and it happens again here. But yeah, just sort of a nice visual masterpiece by Capullo and the rest of the art team. Some very nice, cool images of Batman, especially like the last page.
Mm-hmm.
Even the cover is cool, of, you know, the city of Gotham being inside Batman's cape.
Oh, I actually picked up the Romita Jr. Variant cover.
Boo.
I like this cover.
Yeah, I've got the Capullo one downstairs. But, so yeah. Speaking of which, some artwork for some of the DC Rebirth books has started to be released. Saw Newsarama had Red Hood and the Outlaws number one art and Detective Comics art. Detective Comics art looks awesome. Eddie Barrows.
Nice.
Red Hood and Arsenal was just the black and white, so it wasn't colored. But Detective Comics is going to be good. Just throwing that out there.
All right.
Oh, and shout out to Scott Snyder. I guess a couple times yesterday, I think I tweeted some like good things about Batman, and he sent me a DM to say thank you.
Nice.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm sitting there like tweeting about everything else last night and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and whatnot, and I'm like, oh, thanks. So I wrote him back and said thank him and Greg for the entertaining years. So, good dude. Nice.
Cool.
Now I have to read All-Star Batman.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I was probably going to try to follow it anyway, but...
Right.
Superman Wonder Woman number 28, which I'm sure Dirt read, but of course he's not here. But this was part 4, I believe, of the final days of Superman. It's Wonder Woman and Superman having a nice talk at the Fortress of Solitude. She's found out he's dying because Bruce ratted him out. They kiss and have some like tender moments. And then they can fly off because they both get calls. Wonder Woman gets a call from Steve Trevor. Superman gets a call from Jimmy, I think, or Lois Lane, one or two, about the guy attacking the Daily Planet, thinking he's Superman. So Argus has the guy captive, so they go to sort of interrogate and question him, which leads to Superman going off to talk to Ulysses, the villain from... Superman, the Superman title, when Jeff Johns and John Romita Jr. are on the title.
Oh, they brought him back?
Yes, they brought Ulysses back.
Wow, interesting.
Some fighting happens. The Ulysses breaks free and starts fighting Superman, and even finds Superman. He realizes Superman's not at his 100%. You know, he's a little slower, not as strong because he's dying. He doesn't know that, but and so. I think, yeah, Batman Superman is the next part to it, which comes out next week, so be following that along. Ed Bennis did the guest art, so his art's real nice. It's kind of in the same sort of DC house style of the
Jim Lee.
Yeah, Jim Lee, Tony Daniel vibe.
Yep.
Very detailed.
Oh, wow, yeah, look at that, Ulysses.
Yep.
I'm just flipping through it now.
Yeah, he's there. So I'm enjoying Final Days of Superman. I like that it's coming out each week. There's a part each week to follow. If you want me to follow your like crossover, having me wait 30 days in between could be hard.
Gotcha.
They're doing it well.
All right. So what else did you guys read?
Did anybody read Harley Quinn?
I did, because I reviewed it on theclicknation.com.
Ha-ha.
I liked it.
Really?
Did you read it?
I've fallen off this book, but the only reason why I bring it up was because of the color cover, which I can't, which I'm looking through something and I can't find, but that's fine. I just thought that was an interesting cover to
have. I had
no
intentions of reading it. Like, I got an early copy of it over the weekend, yeah. So I was like, yeah, sure, I'll read it. I'm sitting there flipping through it. Oh, she's finding some guy called Red Tool. Okay.
Yeah, which is why I wanted to bring that up, because I'm like, that's not indicative of anything.
I mean, it went way over my head. I was like, okay, Red Tool, cool. I'm sitting there reading it. And you have to look at some of the pages, look at the word balloons for Red Tool.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there looking at the word balloons because his word balloons are in the shape of, like, tools, mm-hmm. like hacksaw, blade. That. So I'm like, oh, that's. I was like, these are some weird word balloons, and then they're yellow, you know, filled in background yellow. I was like, this is kind of like Deadpool. Uh-huh. I was like, oh, Red Tool.
She's fighting
Deadpool
mm-hmm.
of the DC Universe.
Which when I was reading this properly, they've had a lot of fun with this book, and I've fallen off. I'm still been getting them, but I've kind of fallen off of it, so I'm good to know that they've been continue to have fun with it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very fun book.
Yeah.
But art by John Timms, who I like.
Oh, okay.
So the story continues, so we're not done with Red Tool just yet, so I have to remind myself to check out next month's issue.
All right.
I think the only... Oh, I guess there's two other DC books. I don't know if I want to throw them out now, or I'll open the floor to let y'all reference some comments you want to speak about.
Why don't we just talk about Justice League?
Okay, yeah, that works too.
Did you read Justice League, Roddy?
Roddy, did you?
No.
Did you read? Okay.
Right. Well, we won't try to spoil too much because I think it's worth reading. But the reason is I think it's worth reading even though I'm not as up on this as maybe Tim is. Because it took me a while to kind of remember where we last left a lot of these characters. But Justice League number 49 is another chapter in the Darkseid War. To a certain extent, and I think I'm echoing the same sentiments that I had for previous issues, it seems like this is taking forever. And although, you know, listen, there's a lot of stuff happening. There's a lot of loose ends being followed up on. So that is a positive, but it just seems like this is going on and on, like it's just never ending. There's still two more issues to this.
Normally, I would complain of crossover or events taking this long, because mm-hmm. I do complain about that often. But this Darkseid War, it is Darkseid, right? Darkseid War.
Yes.
Darkseid War has been so entertaining that I don't care. It could be long because the story is great. The art is great.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest selling point is that the Fabok art is, you know, really keeping the story moving along. But the thing is, because I feel it taking a long time, that's why it bothers me. And you know, it's a lot like being in a movie where you don't necessarily feel a long run time. If you don't feel that you've been sitting there for 2+ hours, then you can go in there and say, hey, I didn't mind that it was that long because I enjoyed it. But if it starts to feel like you've been sitting there a long time, that means it's wrong. Exactly. When it starts to feel like you've been reading this forever, then, you know, that's not a positive.
And I wonder what Fabok is doing in Rebirth, because at least right as of now, he's not tied to a book.
Maybe they're giving him a well-earned break.
Yeah, I figured that, but yeah, I want to see him on something.
Yeah, he should be.
So I guess as far as the story goes, the Superwoman rings some spoiler bells.
Hold on.
Superwoman gives birth. Grail appears.
Spoiler alert! It's a boy.
Yeah, it's a boy. Grail appears with her secret weapon in the form of a character we already know. Something happens to the Anti-Monitor.
I love it. And something happens.
I feel like I'm missing the third big event.
Well, we have Lex Luthor trying to basically do what Darkseid was unable to do with Darkseid's own power, which is to defeat whatchamahoozits.
He has his army of parademons versus Anti-Monitor and whatever.
Right. I was about to say the Anti-Monitor.
Nobody's, mm-hmm. his flunkies. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's basically a throwdown between Letts and Anti-Monitor.
Yep, that's like a big chunk of the book.
But it's not two more issues. The next issue's the end, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, because it said like to be concluded, I think.
Oh, okay. Oh, so 51 won't be a conclusion to this. It'll just be the
last 51 issue. And 52 are just like standalone.
Okay. All right, so it's not as bad as I thought because it felt like there were still two more issues of this stuff. So, you know, maybe I'll temper my criticism a little bit with, you know, knowing that there's only one more issue left.
Hey, that reminds me. So Batman 51 was the last book. They couldn't get a 52?
No, it's the last book for this creative team.
I know. So you're saying they're going to start up with 52 with another creative team, or are they just going to start with number one?
No, I think who's his name is doing 50 issue 52. What's his face?
Snyder?
Tinian.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. Because I was about to say, that seems weird to get to.
You know, everyone's leaving their books early so they can get a jump on the Rebirth books.
Sure. I just figured they would have just given them 52 and just, you know.
Which is.
Complete the circle.
Gives me, like, another reason, like, not to read a bunch of the ending books. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Except for like Superman stuff, because it looks like that stuff will go up right to the end.
Gotcha. Okay.
I'm the only one that read Micronauts, right?
I believe so.
Didn't have time to get to it.
I was saying before the show, talking to Agent 70, that going into this, I didn't know anything about Micronauts. I knew of the name Micronauts. Is it like someone in a suit? Is that what Micronauts is?
It's actually a bunch of folks. It's a race of beings, if I'm not mistaken, that lived in the Microverse.
Correct.
Okay. Honestly, I kind of more flipped through it than actually sat down to read it to get what the story was about. But I will say it had like maybe four rotating artists on it, but the main one was David Baldion from Web Warriors. So art was nice. On one of the last pages, there's like a character rundown that I actually myself need to read so I can see, you know, who each character was. But I'm kind of curious to see what IDW does with Micronauts, see if it's something that can... My local shop owner was saying, I guess I'm just gathering this from the conversation I had with him, but he was saying he expected more people to be checking it out at his store. So I'm assuming he must have ordered some extra copies and was surprised to not see them flying off the shelf. But it was only Wednesday night, so I mean, it was just the close of the first day of New Comic Book Day, so maybe hopefully fans will be stopping in to pick it up.
All right. So Batman number 52, as per Dirt, it's on sale in a few weeks. Right. And it's art by Raphael Albuquerque, written by James Tynion IV.
Thank you all for checking Twitter.
Yeah, and he said something about checking the Q8 and the Q&A panel, which I don't see anything there. But
See, Dark Knight 3, The Master Race number 4.
That's a mouthful.
Basically, it's Superman versus his daughter, as she beats the crap out of him all throughout the issue. And there's something going on with the Atom shrinking down at the beginning of the issue, and then at the end of the issue trying to find the resolution.
Wait, I'm sorry, did you say Superman's daughter?
Yes.
Okay. He spoiled it.
There's a daughter.
Huh, isn't there always?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they probably say who the mother is, but if they did it, went over my head, or I don't remember it, because it's been like months since the part 2 or 3 came out.
I was about to say, is there anybody else outside of Lois, even though I think this is set in a different...
Wonder Woman shows up at one point and has a baby strapped to her back, but we don't know.
No, I think it's Wonder Woman and Superman's baby. They just have a second kid. That's who the young one is that's strapped to his back.
Ah, okay.
Huh, interesting.
Right, and it's the daughter who basically grew up as an Amazon, and that's how she's able to combine the best of, you know, the Kryptonian and her Amazonian heritage and lay the smackdown on poor Clark.
But the art is great from Kubert. Batman puts back on the cape and cowl. He doesn't interfere just yet. Carrie Kelly is kind of surprised by that. But yeah, right. I don't know what to think. But it's one of those, since it's been such a big gap, it's one of those I'll have to like read in one collection or one sitting to get the overall enjoyment. I believe. Mm-hmm. And that's it for my DC books for the week. Do we want to do rapid?
Yeah, I think we're there.
Yeah, we could probably do it.
Getting a little later in the night.
So let's pull up our lists and see where we are.
Have y'all read Star Wars 18?
Yeah, I was about to say.
I did not, but let's go ahead and do it.
Okay.
It's the Three Musketeers of Princess Leia, Dr. Aphra, and Sana
Saros. Yeah.
Taking on whoever the mysterious figure is, attacking the prison planet.
Who apparently has some ties to Leia in the past, so I'm I'm kind of wondering who that is.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah, and I was trying to think about who, if it was somebody, it could be, or maybe it could be, I don't know, maybe it was somebody from her miniseries, but I can't quite think
of who. Yeah, I guess we did have a miniseries, didn't she?
Yeah, I mean, it could have been a couple people from that, but the one I'm thinking about, it couldn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, so we have them going through the drill, trying to take order of the place. Sana was getting choked out by a robot, and Afra was trying to fix it, and they were having little issues with each other, and apparently they have a past, which has actually, I think, came up in the last couple of issues anyway, so clearly they knew each other. We have a little thing with C-3PO and R2 where they're in the control booth or whatever, and droids are getting killed left or right, and they're like the only ones left, and R2 gets this idea to use 3PO as a human shield, or a robotic shield, I should say. And this was about the time where Leia and crew is getting to that point, and so they finally get in there, and you just see this picture of R2 just sitting there, and then 3PO's on top of this other droid, thinking he was in a fight. To my mind, is this what fighting looked like? I'm fighting for my life, you know, as 3PO can only do. So that was cool. But outside of that, we finally get to Han and Luke, where they finally get there, because earlier in the story there was a distress beacon sent out by Sana, which got jammed somewhere in the middle, but apparently they picked it up, and the person who was taking over the prison seemingly is getting a drop on them, so I guess mm-hmm. we will see what's going on with that next issue. But this was a pretty good read. I mean, there wasn't anything like groundbreaking in it, but it flowed. The action was pretty good.
What I was going to add, and I have not read this yet, but based on your description and just flipping through this, it finally looks like we're reuniting mm-hmm. two separate kind of parallel stories. You know, we're reuniting the characters.
Right.
You know, we're getting back
together again.
Exactly. So that's kind of cool, because sometimes that's the most fun, is that we have the side effects of both of the parallel stories coming together and combining.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and Luke got to fly the
Falcon. Yeah, much to Han's dismay. Let's talk about this cover for like real quick second. So I don't know if you can see it. If you're watching the video, you can see this. There you go. Tim's got his up. Oh, excuse me. Agent 7's got his up. I'm assuming this is, I've seen this before. This is an homage to something, if I'm not mistaken. Or it seems like it is. It seems like a Batman cover. I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
Oh, yeah, because they're both sort of swinging on lines.
Right. The only thing I feel bad about, I don't feel bad about saying, I was like, wait, why wasn't that Sana instead of Afra in the cover? But that's just me, you know, I let that go. But I enjoyed the cover. I'm not sure. I'm assuming who that is in the background is the mysterious person of antagonist.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. Rapid fire. What about Spider-Woman number 6?
I loved this book.
This book was okay to me, because it was the first issue of the Spider-Women crossover that seemed to be kind of disappointing, because it was a little bit more slow paced.
Right.
Huh. And because we learn about Jessie Drew's background. This is the Jessica Drew counterpart on Earth 65. I liked the actual execution of the story, but overall, comparing them to the other issues of the crossover, I felt like this is probably one of the more disappointing ones.
I thought it was interesting because, well, I guess it was a little slowly, but I didn't think so, because it was like, okay, you got Jess going over to the house, finding out about mm-hmm. all this stuff. There was a fight that ends up ensuing that kind of is reminiscent of Kill Bill to me, because you get the fight with him, with her and the wife, and then the kids come home.
Right.
You know, and then just kind of quickly make peace and that other stuff. And then the wife finds out about, well, I guess she realizes what her husband does is not. I guess she already kind of had an idea. Right. Yeah. She kind of had an idea, but she was like, eh, whatever. It is what it is. But mm-hmm. at the same time, she didn't know it was as bad as it was. So you got that part. And then you do get like little Reed Richards, you know,
of that. I thought that was the best part. Yeah, I guess we were getting to that. The characterization of the Reed Richards of Earth 65 mm-hmm. and how he basically, spoiler alert,
he makes a Stargate.
He builds a Stargate out of Legos. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. I was like, all right, of course. Well, that makes a whole lot of sense.
Of course.
And then sends them back to Earth Prime or 616, whichever one you want to call it.
Right.
You know, and then Jess is like, look, I'm going home to my kid. You guys go and take care of some things. Like, she's kind of becoming a leader in this.
Yeah, I was going to say, basically, it's figure, because they know that Cindy Moon's evil alter ego from Earth 65 is on Earth Prime wrecking havoc or doing something. So Spider-Gwen and Silk are tasked with figuring that out while Spider-Woman goes and checks on her baby.
Mm-hmm. Now, like, I kind of loved it. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I haven't read it yet, but I know I'm going to enjoy it for Joel Jones' art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pretty good. Mm-hmm. And I also liked the part, like, right before they were home between Gwen and Cindy. Like, clearly they have some animosity, or at least Gwen has some animosity between for Cindy, which I need to go back and actually read Spider-Verse and Silk, I guess.
Yeah, it's been an ongoing storyline between the two of them.
There was only one part, because I think I remember reading one issue of Spider-Verse where there was an issue, and I think that was in Spider-Woman, now that I think about it. So,
part of it, issue. Right, just to give you like the briefest overview, part of it is due to the whole hormonal thing that Silk has with Peter Parker.
Right.
You know, and some of the jealous feelings that sort of pop up, you know, and the affection that Gwen has for pretty much any form of Peter Parker, any dimensions Peter Parker. So,
gotcha. It's always about Peter, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. So that's that. Let's see where else we are. Oh, I'll do a rapid fire for Doctor Strange and Last Days of Magic. Okay. So, you know, my notes on this basically tell me that, you know, these are cool little chapters in the ongoing story that Jason Aaron is telling. And, you know, they're very good. They're very, very good chapters. But it does feel like we're still, you know, we're not close to reaching an end yet. But the execution is very, very good. It is, and we say it all the time, I should take myself so I don't have to keep repeating myself. It is a book that Boccolo is born to draw. It is just that dramatic. We have in reading order. Doctor Strange, Last Days of Magic, basically describes some of the things that the Empiricool, the technology-based race, is doing to hunt down a lot of the magic users in on Earth that are sort of allied with Doctor Strange and practicing magic all over the world. Some of these are new creations, I believe. Some of them are updated versions of older characters. And one of them made me think that the RZA, the JZA, old dirty bastard, Inspect the Deck, Wu God, and the rest of a particular clan might show up. I thought it was pretty funny that this particular character brought that out, sort of. You know, getting on to issue 7 of Doctor Strange, like I was saying earlier, Boccolo is born to draw this. We have an origin story for this head Empiricool dude. You know, it's very reminiscent of Superman, of all things. But, you know, when you read it, you'll find out. I'm not spoiling too much when I say that. But at the end of the day, the magical heroes have found themselves on the run, looking for what remains of Earth's magic. So that's where we are. Like I said, it's a very well executed, these are two very well executed chapters in an ongoing story. It just feels like we're still moving the story along.
Hmm. Yeah, I just flipped through it. I saw the nice little Sharknado reference.
Yeah.
And also something else I'll bring about when we talk about Clicks of the Week.
Yep, absolutely. All right. Rapid fire, where else am I? Squadron Supreme number 6. Anyone read this?
Nope.
So I've been off Squadron Supreme since issue number 1. I understand that something has happened to Power Princess. She's revealed herself to be not who she was, not who she was portraying herself to be to all the members of the squadron. We have, it's basically a two-pronged story. One is Dr. Spectrum's search for answers in her quest to kind of reconcile what happened to her at the end of the existence of her world during the Illuminati's visit. If you recall, this is the Dr. Spectrum that whose life was saved by Black Bolt at the end of her world, and she's still trying to reconcile, you know, being sort of having survivor's guilt, being the last survivor of that Earth, and what she's doing with the Squadron on Earth Prime. And the other part of the story is dealing with some of the developments for Nighthawk and for Thundra, who I guess is taking Power Princess's place on the team. This was a very nice bridge issue, because it does delve into a lot of the Dr. Spectrum stuff. That is the main focus of the story. I did like how this issue ended. There's a great kind of splash page. I'm looking for the name of the artist and the colorist specifically, because so this is, well, I recognize Leonard Kirk, but it looks like he's sharing art duties with Paolo Vianelli, and Paul Neary is inking, and Frank Martin is the color artist on this. And it's that art team that gives a great that puts together a great final kind of cliffhanger page to the book. Spoiler alert. It's this last splash page that has like a really cool redesign of a pretty classic character design that is colored so very well. And when you flip to it and you see it, you'll be like, oh, okay, that's actually, you know, like a cool depiction of this character. So when you have an opportunity, take a look at it. And I think that covers all my books this week.
Clicks time.
Do you want to read, or do you want me to read Dirt? Okay. So PCN underscore Dirt, while unable to join us because he's under the weather, did contribute a click of the week this week. And Dirt's click of the week this week is Over the Garden Wall, number one. As all ages books go, this one's surprisingly deep. Much like the best stuff we got from Jim Henson and C.S. Lewis, the story is heartfelt and easy for kids to follow, but has a deeper and sometimes darker thread to it. His 8-year-old daughter can read it and feel like she's expanding her literary horizons, while Dirt can get that old-world folklore feeling that doesn't come around much anymore. He hears that this is based off of a cartoon, and he's going to have to find that cartoon now. For anyone looking for something a little different, a little more imaginative, and a little more on the fantasy side of fantastic, he can't recommend this book enough. That's his click of the week, Over the Garden Wall, number one.
Yeah, apparently it was a mini series on Cartoon Network.
Okay.
From a couple of years ago. Yeah.
My click of the week is Justice League number 49. I think almost, it feels like every time a new issue comes out, it's up there for clicks of the week for me. So, again, art, story, juggling the huge cast, and coming up with a story that I care about puts on the top of the heap for me this week.
All right. Considering the discussion that Roddy Cat and I had and the effusive praise that I think we both had for this book, we may very well be double endorsing a particular book this week. That book may very well be Ms. Marvel number 6. I don't know about Roddy just yet. I'm not going to put words in his mouth, but yeah, that's my click of the week this week.
You know what? I'm...
Oh, it looks like he's wavering, folks. He's wavering.
I mean, I can't dispute your pick, because... Clearly.
What's your other potential candidate?
Ultimus. Nice. Yeah. So, but you know what? Yeah, I will absolutely agree with your pick in Ms. Marvel number 6, because it was an overall delight all the way around.
There you go.
And speaking of clicks, let me get to one from last week that I didn't do, because to be fair, I just read this book like yesterday. Power Man and Iron Fist number 3.
Nice.
Last week, I enjoyed that a lot. There was just so much to like. And I agree with you, Tim. Those the two hench dudes and the two hench dudes need a book.
Yeah, if I said I need to follow their adventures.
Yeah, because I could see that being some hilarity there.
Sounds good. All right, so we want to read an ad now?
Yes.
Okay, so let's do Busted Tees as I wait for this to load up. We'll do the Busted Tees ad. This episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles show is sponsored by Busted Tees, your home for funny, awesome, cool t-shirts that are sure to get your friends' attention. Busted Tees puts many of their popular shirt designs on sale each week. Choose from several eye-catching t-shirts inspired by current pop culture, such as BB-8 like Thumbs Up and Droid Evolution, inspired by Star Wars The Force Awakens, Rick and Morty, that's Rick and Morty as Legos, Bernie Larry 2016, pretty, 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 pretty good, inspired by Curb Your Enthusiasm, and Samojis, the many faces of Samuel L. Jackson as emojis, and much more are on sale. To help keep our podcast free, order from Busted Tees by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Busted Tees banner and then shop for awesome t-shirts. Busted Tees through cspn.us. Do it today. What was that?
Perhaps a new addition to the soundboard.
To the soundboard. There you go.
It's coming out, though.
We'll see how it comes out in post-production.
Yeah, no, right.
All right. Let's see. News for the week. In Cinemax news, we have David S. Goyer's Krypton TV series is nearing a pilot order at Sci-Fi. So we actually might see that. Join the Supergirl, Flash, Arrow, iZombie, as far as Warner Brothers DC properties on television.
And it's on Sci-Fi, which they've been hitting on some cylinders lately, but I'm still kind of, you know, reluctant on that one. I don't know.
Robert Downey Jr. will be joining Spider-Man Homecoming. In what capacity, yeah, we don't know.
I was about to say, that was a pretty poorly kept secret. I think they were just waiting to announce that.
Well, here's another one while we're at it, because down at the very bottom of the sheet, because I got tired of trying to move stuff around. Robert Downey Jr. said he's down for Iron Man 4,
mm-hmm.
So that could be a possibility also. And apparently,
yeah, Chris Evans said he'd like to repay the favor by, you know, Robert Downey being in Cap 3. Mm-hmm. Evans could repay the favor by being in Iron Man 4.
Because it makes sense, because it hasn't been in any of the Iron Man movies.
Yeah. Well, no one else really has other than War Machine.
Widow.
Oh, that's true. That's right. I apologize.
And speaking of that, I should mention, or maybe I should have mentioned like weeks ago, that I have been going back through and watching all of these cinematic movies. If you want to check that out, because I should have been taking that back up this past Monday, but I didn't because of things. The hashtag is RTCWMM. That's Road to Civil War Movie Marathon. So if you want to check that out, you should see all my musings there and whenever I take it back up again this weekend.
Cool.
I just finished phase one, so it's like, yeah, you know.
Hasbro Cinematic Universe assembles Michael Chabon, Brian K. Vaughan, and more to their writer panel.
Get that money.
According to the Hollywood Reporter, Pulitzer Prize winning author Michael Chabon, Saga and Why the Last Man writer Brian K. Vaughan, and Guardians of the Galaxy co-writer Nicole Perlman are on board to develop the interconnected movie universe, which will unite such toy properties as G.I. Joe, Micronauts, Visionaries, Mask, and ROM.
Yeah.
I want to see this happen, but apparently they got some other people. I didn't see the Chael Coker, who's doing Luke Cage. The showrunner for Luke Cage is also in there. So they got some names.
Well, they've definitely got a good pool of creative people.
Yeah, and people who have done, you know, similar works before. So
right.
Marvel's Inhumans movie's been pulled from their release schedule.
Hence the hole in the schedule.
So sad. So
is
sad.
It? Is it really?
I'm sad about this because, you know, because I want to see Black Bolt on the big screen. I want to see the Inhuman royal family on the big screen. That's just one of the things that is intriguing to me, because there's so many of these characters we've seen now. There's still a treasure trove out there of characters that we haven't, and that's one of them, that particular group. So I was looking forward to the Inhumans.
I know
Eclectic's not a big fan.
It'll be safe to say that the royal family will be appearing in the movies and not just on
TV.
Yeah, TV. They won't waste them on TV.
Yeah,
I wouldn't think so. It'd be slow like Karnak if they did, but
you know. Yeah. All right.
I mean, no shade to Karnak, but you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I understand. We all do. We all do.
It'd be the easy one to do on TV, also. So
yeah, the easiest.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Which we might get to that later, also.
We have another X-Men Apocalypse trailer.
Yeah, I think it's the last full one.
Yeah, because it comes out in like a month or so, right?
From yesterday, I guess, I think.
Nathan Fillion's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 character was revealed.
Which is pretty cool.
Hollywood!
Hollywood's up to no good.
Actually, we don't know if it's actually that version, but yeah, it's definitely going to be Wonder Man. So
that's funny. All right. Yeah, no more Civil War spoilers.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You know.
Enough. Enough is enough. Time for a change.
All right.
To quote Owen Hart, rest in peace.
Yeah.
Jeremy Renner says Hawkeye Netflix series comments were a joke. Of course they were.
Yeah, until it happens.
Stanley Chakra set as live action movie from Phantom Graphic India.
Yeah, they're trying to get a Bollywood movie done off of his Indian character, which I guess makes some sense.
Wolverine 3 casts Richard E. Grant in mad scientist type mystery role.
Okay.
And they also add Stephen Merchant
from the UK office and other various places.
Peabody Award for Netflix Marvel's Jessica Jones is a win for Adapted Comic Book Fair.
I heard that you know, I was very, very glad to see that. Because,
yeah, no, very, very never happens. Very much never happens.
Because exactly for those reasons, I was very happy to see that Jessica Jones was being recognized for being a creative new show and actually pushing a lot of boundaries and telling new types of stories.
Marvel addresses the Doctor Strange's Ancient One whitewashing controversy.
Yeah, see, you know what it's all about? It's all about the Benjamins.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm quoting rap lyrics all night tonight now.
It's good, it's good.
It's the mic, yeah. It's the new mic. You haven't said anything about it yet, Roddy. We'll get to it.
I was going to get to that, man. I like the setup. I like the setup. Yes, and I did hear your, I heard your tribute last week.
Oh, and, to Fife. Yes, and to Prince.
Yeah, and I was debating about whether I should bring up one that I thought about later on, but we'll see.
So back to Doctor Strange. You guys want to read this because I'm sort of torn about this.
So it was all I'm gonna say is about it's an explanation. I'm not saying it's a great one, but it's a plausible one as far as what they believe. I am still not convinced, but. And the other side of that is, well, Tilda Swinton in herself is like an ethereal spirit in many ways, but so you can kind of go take that as what you will. I don't know, but I don't. Their reasoning was, like I said, only plausible. I can't say that was, yeah.
That's what it's about.
Yeah, that's a weird, really weird reason to do it. But at the same time, if you think about stuff like the reimagining of the Mandarin from the Iron Man movie,
right?
It kind of took that same bent with it,
right?
Even though it's still relatively, it washed better then, but even still doesn't make sense.
Well, for one thing, they preserved the Mandarin as a character by revealing that guy as being kind of a, you know, because they revealed that the Mandarin that was in the Iron Man movies. I'm not going to click the spoiler bell because it's been a number of years now.
Yeah, but, it's been a while.
But, you know, they basically preserved the possibility that they could do a comic book style Mandarin in the movies. Right. So while they could, you know, they could possibly flash back if the geopolitical situations change, they could potentially flash back and have another Ancient One be of Tibetan origin. The fact that they went totally, you know, they moved the entire, you know, they basically spoiled one part of the movie, which is that I'm presuming that Stephen Strange is not going to be climbing in the Himalayas to find magic.
Nah, doesn't seem so.
So, you know, if they go and do that, then it's not as surprising anymore.
Right. Or if they do something like that, it'll be a scene where you just see him like looking up a mountain or something like that, and then, you know.
Right, but because of the change that they made to the character's history, the Ancient One's history, it's unlikely that Stephen Strange will be searching for magical help in the Himalayas, but in another locale. And once that's, you know, once they get to that part of the story and they establish where Stephen Strange is and what mountains he's climbing, what region of the world he's in, then obviously it stops making sense that the Ancient One's going to be Asian.
Mm.
So, you know, at that point, it's only the people that understand the character's history that are going to accuse Marvel of whitewashing. But if you're going to change the character to that extent and the character's history, then obviously it does make sense that the character's no longer Tibetan. So, you know, I mean, I'm not comfortable with this. I'm not comfortable with the reason for it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like you said, it's plausible. It's unfortunately understandable, given the geopolitical ramifications and the money ramifications that could come from a portrayal of this character being from Tibet.
Hashtag reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The first Batman, the Killing Joke trailer is no laughing matter.
Yeah, there are going to be a bunch of those jokes.
I haven't watched the trailer yet, so.
I no quarters too.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, James Gunn teases Mantis and Storyboard.
That's cool.
Yeah, to which I guess they have the one girl, Palm, whatever her last name. I apologize to her for not remembering. That is the assumed person anyway.
Batman v Superman R-rated Ultimate Cut and Special Features are coming.
Oh, possibly. My God.
So the R-rated cut will be 181 minutes long, up from the 151-minute theatrical release, so 30 extra minutes.
Because it wasn't fucking long enough.
Hell,
although, to be fair, actually, now that I think about it, maybe it'll fill in the gaps that were actually missing in the movie, but...
181, that's 3 hours.
Yeah, that's almost Lord of the Rings length.
Goodness gracious.
I can't do it.
I'm curious to see what they put back in. That's all I can say. Because like I said, the movie was missing some things, and maybe...
More them... boohooing over Martha's.
Oh my goodness.
Perhaps.
My Martha was just as good as your Martha.
Oh no.
Not with buddies.
So on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., everyone geeked out over Coulson.
Yeah, dude.
Using a
photon shield!
Yes! I love that part. I was like, oh, shit.
Awesome. I didn't even listen. I pulled something that Tim does all the time with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this week, which was kind of have it on in the background while I was doing something else. Mm-hmm. I was actually in the middle of, like, you know, a bunch of phone calls and whatnot, and I only had it on in the background. But then when I saw the particular scene where Coulson has to use this tech, I geeked out really hard.
I'm not going to lie. I got spoiled on that scene because I was stupidly watching Twitter at the time, and I still watched it like 3 times.
I was like, gotcha. Yes. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
X-Men Apocalypse's Ty Sheridan signed on for 2 more movies. Not sure who he's playing.
Cyclops.
Ah, okay. Robert Downey Jr. is down for Iron Man 4. Yeah. Pay me, and of course he'll be down.
Mm-hmm.
And in the comic book news, Neil deGrasse Tyson was writing Guardians of Infinity number 8. Now he isn't, but there's 2 horror directors are taking his place, I guess.
Yeah, the Soska sisters, who are a name that horror people know quite well.
Mm-hmm.
The sexual harassment allegations against DC editor Eddie Berganza have started to finally appear on some of the higher profile comic book websites. So this all came to a head starting, I think, last week when it was announced that Shelley Bond would be removed from the executive editor position at Vertigo Comics. So again, that was another woman in comics. There's not many of them in high profile positions being let go, and people were mad that, you know, why would you let someone as talented as Shelley go when you have still employed males with sexual harassment allegations on their record, again still employed. So
right, a lot of people also didn't have something to do with, they were saying, I've heard rumor of had something to do with that, didn't have anything to do with it, but also around the same time of that other imprint that the dude was starting, Jared Way. Doesn't have anything to do with the other, but it just seems kind of weird that it happened similarly around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people on Twitter and other social media platforms were giving their testaments of experiences working at DC. I saw one artist on his Tumblr was saying how an art director for DC tried to make a pass at him at a convention one time. Janelle Aslin,
right? Yeah.
From she runs, what is it? I don't want to get the name of her publishing company wrong.
Oh yeah. Rosie.
It's not Rosie Press, is it?
I think so. Something like that. Yeah.
But she also
She was also in comics industry. I think she might still be in outside of that, but I know, I can't remember what site she was involved.
She was saying even though she was never assaulted or had any, I guess, bad interactions with Eddie, but she knew of other people who had reported him. So basically, what had happened, I guess, at WonderCon 2012, I think the news were saying how Eddie made a pass at a writer's or artist's or creator, might as well say, just a creator's wife at a con, and he got reprimanded, and he was taken, his title of executive editor was taken from him, and he had to go through sort of, I guess, sexual harassment programs from Warner Brothers, but he kept his position. And then I guess there was rumors of no women allowed on the Superman creative teams because they didn't want women working with him for fear of, I guess, him doing something to them. Which is odd because I believe, well, not odd, but I could think of one woman that I guess worked for him, and that would be Meredith Finch, the wife of David Finch, because I believe Wonder Woman was a under the Superman family of titles. But it's interesting because, again, shout out to the Word Balloon podcast when John had Greg Rucka on there, and Greg mentioned that the Wonder Woman would be under the Batman editorial group, which at the time I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting, moving Wonder Woman to the DC books. And this is before all the allegations came out about Eddie, but apparently, as the word goes, Greg Rucka had it in his contract that he didn't want to, he'd come back to DC, but Eddie couldn't be his editor.
Wow.
So they shifted her over to the DC books, or not DC, the Batman books, which I actually believe that. That's one rumor I actually believe. Because why even move her from Superman titles to the Batman titles like that?
So, right.
A lot going on there, and people are keeping the conversation going because comics need to be a safe space.
It's true.
Absolutely.
And to finish up, let's see, Nighthawk comes out next week. Thunderbolts comes out next week. Gail Simone and Funko help out a third grade student.
That was a cool story. I didn't fill that one in, but it was an old story. Basically, what happened was she was at, I think it was at Emerald City, and she found out about, I think through her sister or somebody, about this third grade student who really liked Deadpool. So she, asked people to kind of help her get some stuff for him, and Funko, you know, pitched in and gave him a bunch of Funko stuff. You know, cool. I think there was some issues. There was a reason why there was a student, because I guess there was some particular issues that he had been going through, or something happened. I can't remember. Also, that Lion Forge, I don't know if you saw that one, but Lion Forge has got two Voltron comics coming out that is going to be based off of the Netflix series. There's a nice little Kerry Randolph cover outline that's on the story. It's pretty cool.
All right.
And that about does it for tonight's episode.
Well, hang on.
What do you got, buddy?
Well, it would not be me if I didn't have something. Excuse me.
Oh, we had an unboxing? Yay!
It's been a while since we've done one of these. So if you're watching,
did you see we had an unboxing last week?
Didn't one of y'all did? Didn't you? I don't.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was the Marvel.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You had your build a figure. I was so mad because I still can't find that Black Panther.
I knew it was going to be hard. That's why I bought the whole set.
Yeah. So, and I still can't find a good price on that one. But anywho's, we will get to that. Like I said, if you're watching the video, you will see that I'm holding up a box from Collector's Core, which is the speaking of Funko, the Marvel Funko partnership. And this one has to do with, of course, Civil War. And unfortunately, silly me, forgot to bring in a pair of scissors or to cut this damn thing open before I came in this room.
Same thing happened to me.
So you are about to hear me brute force with that boy real quick, and I will go through the contents.
Ronnie smash.
Yeah, really. All right. So I'm going to have to move this up just a little bit. So, all right. So first off, we have the box art, which is the top. You have a nice picture of, looks like Cap and Iron Man in split screen.
Right, and their teams.
And their teams.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So you can see that right there. And also at the top of the box, we have these two. We have a patch and a pin, which the patch looks like a skull logo for a collector's core. And the pin is... Oh, nice. The pin is Black Panther.
Oh, okay. I couldn't
tell. You probably can't. Yeah, you can't really tell that because of the plastic. Is the glare. So that's kind of cool. I will, if I make it to Heroes Con, that probably will be rock. We will see. All right. And on the inside of it, we have... basically, we have an ad for Collector's Core. Showing, this actually looks like what's in the box, actually, so this is going to be kind of handy. Yeah, on one side we have what looks to be what's on the inside of the box, and on the back we basically have what looks to be the next box? Yes, the next box, which is going to be June, which is Women of Power.
Nice.
A nice little thing of
Spider-Gwen.
Spider-Gwen on the cover, and then, of course, you have the little thing with all the pass boxes and, you know, how you can order it. Let's see, this to the way... We have, and yeah, this definitely does say what's on there. So, we have a shirt next. Okay, fingers. You want to work sometime tonight.
Ooh, very cool.
It's Captain America Civil War, for those not watching the video. And this looks like the Funko versions of Iron Man and
Captain America.
T-shirt?
Yes, mm-hmm. That is a T-shirt.
And at the bottom it says, whose side are you on? So this will be probably rocked.
Next Thursday.
That could possibly happen also.
We'll get to that at the end of the show.
Yeah, definitely. We have a variant cover of a variant copy rather of looks like Black Panther number one.
Cool. Oh, Funko cover. That's cool. Mm-hmm.
And you have Black Panther lunging at Captain America there.
That's nice.
Which is cool because, you know, can never have enough variants of Black Panther apparently. Let's see. We also have this Civil War lanyard.
Oh, we're going all out now.
Yeah, which clearly is going to get used at probably
a con.
Yeah, at the very least.
Sure.
So there's that. And let's see, we have from the Dorbs line of Funko products, we have a little
Civil
War figure right there.
That's definitely an exclusive because you will not see, and what Roddy is holding up is the faceplate up Iron Man,
right.
Dorbs figure. That is definitely not, it is marked exclusive. It is definitely not something you're going to see on a store shelf. That is exclusive to
you for right now, because guarantee you they will be on the shelves at some point. Because I have, matter of fact, I think I may have seen this one in my local comic book shop, but that could have been
for
this school. So, and last but not least, we get we get some more art down at the bottom of this box, so I'll do that. But last but not least, we have two pack pops.
Wow.
Which is, if you can't see through the glare, it's Captain America and Iron Man.
That's really nice.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. Got Iron Man with his raised up forwards and got, you know, Cap with the shield. Looks like they're looking at, they're both bobbleheads, looks like. The bobblehead.
That's awesome. I'd prefer the bobblehead pops over the vinyl figure pops that are just static.
Yeah. I don't know. It depends on which ones, but I kind of like the vinyl figures a little bit more. And of course on the back you get, you know, hey, these are all the ones in this particular run of this one.
Sure.
So that, as they say, is that. And of course, like I said, at the bottom of it there's more of the art that was surrounding the box.
Sure. Nice. Definitely more, movie based.
Mm-hmm. Which looks like that's the Wasp in the middle of that. That's weird.
All new Wasp.
And, that's right.
They're teasing that.
But yeah, you pretty much got movie versions of everybody, including that looks to be the Wasp, but I don't know if that's the case or not. So, and that, as they say, is that.
Cool.
And with that, we say adieu for tonight's Comic Book Chronicles.
Are we going to try to fit an ad in, or?
Oh, yes. Send us out with the ad for.
All right. So I'll do My Comic Shop. So today's podcast is sponsored by My Comic Shop. Go to cspn.us, then click on the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, click on the My Comic Shop banner and order from a vast selection of new releases, back issues, vintage classics, graphic novels, and more to be delivered right to your door. Why bother schlepping to the local comic book store when you can order your books online? My Comic Shop through cspn.us. Do it today. All right.
Go to follow Dirt on Twitter at @PCN_Dirt. He shared out the Clicks of the Week images that will of course be resharing tonight and into tomorrow. And go to popculturenetwork.com. Follow me on Twitter at TimDogg98 and at CBCron. Agent 70 is at @agent_70.
On Twitter and Instagram.
And Roddy Cat's at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need.
And on Instagram on both. And rest in peace, Prince, since I lost the nerve to do the tribute that I was going to actually do.
Oh, come on now. We got a minute. Don't lose the nerve.
No, not going to do it. It might show up somewhere else. Let's just say that, though.
Are we going to break out into song? I'll back you up.
It could have happened, but no, it's not going to happen.
Okay, fine. We'll do it off the air.
We're not sure what time we're recording next week.
Yes, we'll discuss that. Yeah, we'll discuss that now. So I've got tickets for an early evening showing of Captain America Civil War next Thursday. It sounds like Tim is getting ready to do so as well. Rodney may do that.
I have mine already, and I think it's the same time as yours, actually.
So then we're going to do our very level best to try to get on next Thursday night and do a show and talk about our first impressions of Captain America Civil War, which has some really nice-looking Rotten Tomato numbers right now. It just does.
Yeah, and it was probably going to. And it's already been out
it's out around the world right now. Yeah. So. All righty.
We'll be back. Yeah, like I said, stay tuned to us at CBCron on Twitter, and we'll keep you all posted. We are the Comic Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Peace.